Obamacare is here to stay.
Tests, office visits, pills, hospitalizations. What do they all actually cost?
$330 billion with a B.
Marks the beginning of open enrollment in the health insurance marketplaces.
This is confusing.
You're listening to Health O'Clock. I'm Andrea.
I'm Jane.
And this is show number 5. Show number 5, recorded on February 28th,
2016.
And today we're going to talk about going to the doctor.
Bum, 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 bum.
Going to the doctor. First off, my actuarial disclaimer, I am an actuary. I work for a consulting firm. I used to work for a health insurance company. I do not represent either of these two entities, nor do I represent the Society of Actuaries, the American Academy of Actuaries, etc. So if you need an actuary, hire one.
I am a normal guy. This is my normal guy disclaimer. I at no point will ever represent any Hanes nor Fruit of the Loom company. I do represent the couch and many, many remotes that come with said couch.
Thank you, Jay.
Yes. Well, it's important people know.
Yes, it is. So going to the doctor. This is a very broad subject, and we kind of wanted to approach it from the standpoint of you, the end user. When you go to the doctor, how do you decide where to go? What provider do you pick? Do you know what kind of questions to ask when you go to the doctor? And actually, most of this episode is going to be an interview with a doctor that we happen to know. And she's got some really great things to say.
That is right.
So, but first off, Jay, when you go to the doctor, how do you decide where to go? Like, where do you get your information on what doctor is good? What conditions spur you to go to the doctor?
So this has changed a lot since growing up in a small town to moving to the big city. Growing up in a small town, you just went to your doctor. You went to the hospital. There's only one choice. And back then, there was no such thing as minute clinics or 24-hour, you know, doctor's helps and little that just didn't exist. So you just really had one option. Whereas now that I'm on company insurance, and now that I am on my own, going to the doctor is a lot more confusing. I don't know what is the best for my situation. Obviously, you know, in an emergency case, I would hop in the ambulance and go to any hospital. But when it's like a checkup or something, I don't know. I have to call them and help them set it up.
Yeah. Well, you got to fill out all kinds of forms, and you don't know if the doctor's any good till you get in there. And what if you don't like them? Then you've got to start the process all over again.
Oh, it's a mess.
I've used those, like, rate your doctor type websites and had, you know, different varying sets of luck with the rate your doctor app. So, I don't know. I think we should jump right into our interview and talk to a real doctor.
Yes, a real doctor.
So, we talked to Dr. King, and we'll have her introduce herself.
I am Dr. Julie King, and I work actually at St. Catherine Hospital. My specialty is in internal medicine, and I work as a hospitalist.
A hospitalist, and a lot of people might not know that, so we kind of dug a little bit deeper and asked her what that meant.
And so basically what that means is internal medicine is a specialty where I see adult patients only. I am 18 years and older. Internal medicine's kind of traditionally known for handling chronic diseases and then going into subspecialties. 20 years ago or so is when they started creating hospitalists, which are basically physicians that work just in the hospital. So I don't technically have a clinic. I go to the hospital every day and I round on hospital patients and I admit people to the hospital. I take care of them in the hospital. And then when I discharge them, from the hospital, they go to their primary care doctor, which is in the clinic setting.
So Dr. King, she's kind of like all those hospital and doctor shows. She's like what the show revolves around, the hospitalists. Yes. They're kind of the hub for all of the care you receive in an inpatient setting.
That is right.
So we wanted to know a little bit more about her. Why did you decide to become a doctor?
Well, it kind of started when I was younger and growing up. My mom is a registered nurse, and so she was the director of nursing for a small hospital in Syracuse, Kansas. And so when I was little, I spent a lot of time actually in the hospital visiting her or being there after school or something. So I kind of got a glimpse into what it was like to be in the healthcare field. And then as I started getting older and getting into high school and then into college, I started mentoring with, he was my family physician at the time, basically just doing some shadowing experience and just looking at what he did on a day-to-day basis. I knew I liked science and I liked math and I really liked like the biology and anatomy and those kinds of sciences. So I really enjoyed that. And I really liked the healthcare field. I really enjoyed learning about like the human body and the diseases that are associated with it and all the treatments and all the remedies.
So being a health insurance nerd myself, I've kind of learned about all the different types of providers. You have doctors kind of in an inpatient setting. You have doctors that work for hospitals directly, like they get a salary from the hospital. You have doctors that are contractors for a hospital, so they send out a separate bill. You have doctors that have their own freestanding clinics. So there's a lot of different flavors of how it operates. So I kind of wanted to know that from Julie, and I also kind of wanted to know how insurance plays into what she does. So do you work directly for the hospital, or are you kind of like a contractor?
I am employed by the hospital.
Okay.
So I'm a direct employee of that, yeah, of the hospital.
So you don't really have to think about insurance or the hospital does all that for you?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, because we, and actually St. Catherine is a Catholic hospital as well. So, you know, we take everybody. We take Medicare, Medicaid, private insurance. We take no insurance, you know, if patient doesn't have any insurance, if they're, you know, even an undocumented person, we'll still take them and treat them. Yeah, we pretty much take everything.
So do you get any cost pressures from the hospital as far as, oh, we need to make sure that we need to be more efficient on these things? Or do you get any of that from the hospital, or do you have autonomy in what you're doing?
I pretty much have autonomy in what I'm doing, but I know that they do keep track of things. Like they look at our utilization of different tests, and if they kind of track trends, mostly in imaging and labs that I'm drawing, you know, if I'm ordering just like these outrageous labs that cost, you know, bukus of dollars, or if I'm ordering imaging or something that just wasn't even consistent with what we should be doing, then they would obviously kind of flag that and talk to me about that. But I really don't do that because as working in the hospital, you kind of have to look at what is standard of care and looking at what's most beneficial for the patient and what's less expensive. So I basically just try to order tests and imaging and all of those things. I want it to be the least expensive for the patient, but I also have to balance that with what is the best image or what is the best test for trying to figure out the diagnosis. So I don't necessarily get pressures from the hospital, but I am still aware of kind of what's going to be a more expensive test. And if it's avoidable and we don't have to do it, and if it won't change my management, then I try to avoid incurring that cost to the patient. But if it's something that it's the only thing that's going to tell us whether it's this diagnosis or not, then I go ahead and do it.
Now, this prompted a question. Doctors will often prescribe a test without knowing how much it costs. And I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, we kind of had a discussion about that because you hear a lot of times that doctors are very removed from the financials of healthcare. They order what needs to be done and they don't really know what the cost is. So we asked Julie if that was true or not.
I actually just read an article in one of my journals, and they were talking about if the physician was actually provided a list of how much every individual test cost, they were basically doing a study to see if that would actually either help or hinder the physician. So if I knew how much the hospital charged a patient for test X, Y, and Z, would I order those tests knowing how much it cost? And some physicians said yes, some physicians said no, I'm going to still do what we've been trained to do. But it just kind of helps keep everything in perspective for the physician. So if there is like a lab that you may or may not necessarily need, you may not order it because if it costs $200 for that lab, then you may not do it if you don't really have to do it.
Yeah, we had another question for her, and then we might take a break after this. But I wanted to know about there are a lot of changes coming up in the industry and how that affected her. So kind of along the same lines, there's a lot of changes going on yes. in the healthcare industry. The Affordable Care Act, there's kind of a move towards pay for performance instead right. of a fee for service.
Exactly.
What's your perspective on all those changes?
I think it's good because it actually helps to make sure that the physicians are providing the best care possible and the patient is getting the best quality possible, because I'm graded by several different quality indicators, and it helps to keep me aware of what I'm doing correctly and things that I need to improve upon. And I think that is all going to make the patients stay in the hospital better. Plus, if I know that I'm providing them the highest quality of care, then hopefully that will reduce their length of stay. They'll have a better outcome. I'll decrease their readmission, you know, to the hospital.
This has been pretty interesting.
It really has.
As promised, I think it is very much important that we think about our brains. And we just say, you know what? We're thinking about things we've never thought before. A lot of new stuff. Let's just take a break.
All right. We'll be back in a minute with more from Dr. Julie King.
Thank you for listening. Try yoga today. Why not?
So we're back with more from Dr. Julie King, and we'll jump right into the next question. We were talking before the break about pay for performance, which is basically using all these different metrics to
for doctors,
and they get paid or get incentives based on how well they do quality wise, how the patient improves, and so forth. So do they give you like a printout of here's you and here's the national standard? Or
they do work on that. Yeah, we're given different scores. We have a quality department, and like they basically track all of our indicators, and they look at things like our core measures and how we're doing as a hospital, but also if we want them to break it down more, then they can actually do that. And then they can rate us by physician. So they look at by your specialty and then what you do in the hospital. So they basically just watch our performance, and then our quality department will, they have the ability to provide us with a report and show us you're doing really well on these things, but on this certain indicator, we've noticed that you're at this percentage and we need you to be at this percentage. And that just helps us realize that, you know, we need to do better in a certain area. There's core measures that are kind of designated by the Joint Commission and designated by Medicare and Medicaid, and, you know, all of these different core measures that every hospital pretty much across the nation tracks. And then each hospital then can have the ability to kind of look at everything as far as if there's hospital specific things that we want to look at. And we're actually, our hospital, we're going to be starting to kind of revamp this as well within our hospital. And as far as the report, how we're going to reach out to the physicians, you know, whether we're going to give a quarterly report or if we're going to give it like a biannual or something like that. But like something that I look at is, or they track on me, is like patient satisfaction scores and those types of things. And so they give me a quarterly report on patient satisfaction and how I rank among the other hospitalists and then the hospitalist group as a whole. And then that allows me to know where I kind of stand and what I need to improve on. So.
All right. And then it was very exciting. We got to ask the question that is on everybody's mind.
The question of all questions. Has the Affordable Care Act really affected the hospital much? Have you seen more patients because of it? Anything different since the passage of that?
I don't know necessarily that I've seen any more patients because, quite honestly, I still have patients that come in who don't have insurance, even though, you know, they're supposed to technically, I guess, by the Affordable Care. So, you know, they've just opted out of getting it. So I still see those unassigned or uninsured patients. I probably am seeing more just because more people are now utilizing the hospital because there's such a primary care shortage. But now that they do have insurance, they're at least able to come to the hospital. And then if they're sick enough, then I'll admit them to the hospital.
Are you seeing any trends in people's health status? Are you seeing certain chronic diseases more than you used to? Or
I am. You know, one thing that actually is kind of encouraging is I'm actually seeing a decrease in tobacco use, even though it seems like I see a lot of people still with tobacco-related illnesses like emphysema, COPD, those types of things. Nationwide, I think the actual number of smokers is actually starting to go down. But what we are seeing is there's an increase in obesity. And obesity, since obesity is on a rise nationwide, we're seeing a lot of diseases related to obesity, things like obstructive sleep apnea, diabetes, hypertension, high cholesterol, those types of things. You know, some people are genetically predisposed to some of those things like diabetes, and some high cholesterol is kind of a family trait. We are seeing a lot more of that because of obesity. So
they're all now, kind of connected, aren't they?
They're all kind of connected. Yeah, exactly. And so I'm encouraging people to lose weight, and then by losing weight, then they can bring their blood pressure down. They can get their sleep apnea effectively treated and, you know, everything else. Because those things like diabetes and high blood pressure and high cholesterol then lead to further chronic diseases like kidney disease, all of those things down the line as well. So
here's a controversial question.
Okay.
How can I tell a good doctor from a not so great one?
Depending on where you are location-wise, if you're in a smaller town, you know, reputation kind of precedes everybody.
Ask your friends, right?
Yeah. So in a smaller town, it would be kind of word of mouth and asking around, what do you think about this doctor? What do you think about that doctor? You know, when you meet a doctor, you kind of want to know, as far as bedside manner is going to be a very important thing. Do they take the time to make good eye contact with you? Do they allow you to tell, you know, answer questions? Or do they cut you off? Are they real short? Are they real, kind of standoffish with you, or do they actually make eye contact with you and actually listen to what you have to say, address your problems, those types of things. There's different websites that grade physicians, like Health Grades, and there's something called Vitals, and there's all sorts of things online. But those are kind of hard because some of those reviews, you know, there might be one review or there might be five reviews, and they may just be one person that just didn't like something about their hospital stay, and so they're going to write a bad review. So those are kind of up in the air about whether or not they're actually a good physician or if they're just a, you know, just an upset patient.
That kind of reminds me of apartment reviews. Like, you go out and look at an apartment review, and it's only the tenants that are so upset with the service that they leave horrible reviews.
Exactly. But if they're all great.
It may not have even been the physician that they were upset at. It may have been that they didn't have, you know, a certain channel on the television in the hospital and they were mad about it. And so they give you a bad review.
Yeah. So I did want to also bring up that at work, and I don't know if you knew this, Andrea, mm-mm, I have something called Compass. And Compass is a third party that my company has hired to do all this research for me. So if I need to go to the doctor, or let's say I need to have my feet checked out, I call up Compass, and they know my insurance, they know my plan, and they will provide me a list of doctors that accept my insurance, and they will give me, based on reviews of each doctor, how old they are, what gender they are, how long they've been in the service, not in the service, but, you know, practicing. And I think that's kind of a cool thing that option's out there.
Yeah, I think my new company that I just started at has that as well, but I have yet to use it.
Oh,
so
yes.
Maybe I should.
Oh, yeah, it's great. All right, but back to Julie.
All right, here's another question for you. What do you wish people knew about going to the doctor or going to the hospital?
The hospital, I kind of jokingly say this, but the hospital is not a hotel, meaning that when you go to the hospital, you're going to have to wait on certain things, especially in the emergency room. We see this a lot where patients get really frustrated and upset because they have to wait. But in the emergency room, you know, there's a lot of different patients. There's a lot of different things going on there. So while everybody who goes to the hospital feels that their symptom or their concern is very, very important, there may be somebody else who's a little bit sicker, or somebody who just got in a car crash, or somebody who's, you know, actively dying as they come through the door. So it's always kind of a priority, and they have to triage the sickest patients first. And so, you know, you're going to have to wait a little bit when you go through the ER. And it's hard for people who feel bad to really grasp that, because you feel bad, you want to be seen, you want to get treated, and you either want to go home or you're going to go to the hospital.
All right. Well, I think that is enough information about doctors. It's very, very plentiful. And thank you, Julie,
thank you to Julie. We had a great time talking to her.
That was kind of fun to wire up this whole technology thing and get her Skyped in.
Yeah. Well, it sounds pretty good for bringing her through Skype. So go us.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to post a link out on our website to two things that might be useful to you. We have the Patient Bill of Rights. This is basically, as a patient, you should know what your rights are as far as getting medical care. Things like you have the right to know what's being done, alternatives to the care that's being offered. You have the right to refuse care, etc., etc. So there will be a link to that out on our website. Also, I think in the interview, Julie mentioned it's important to ask questions. It's important to know what's being done. Make sure you understand the treatment. Make sure you understand if they prescribed you medicine, how to take it, and what with. So we've got a list of questions that we posted a link out there, and you can take that to the doctor with you next time you go.
Cool. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you again for listening to our show.
We had a great time. And again, our email is healthoclockpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to get some email from you. So drop us a line. Go out and subscribe or rate us.
Yes, totally subscribe. We've seen some numbers, and it's very encouraging. But we know a lot of people are just going to the website to listen, and that's great. But we would love it if you subscribe. That way the show can be sent to you every time we release. So that would be appreciated.
Also, keep those comments coming. We love to hear from you.
That's right. All right, folks. Until next time, I'm Jay.
I'm Andrea.